Censored Radio Free America.
Rick Adams
is on.
Hello there. Well, ladies and gentlemen and children of all ages, it is I, your fearless leader, Rick Adams, Uncensored Radio Free America. And we start another week tonight, and yes, indeed, as always, fascinating conversations, things that they don't dare talk about in the other media, the controlled media, the Newsweek, Time media, the New York Times, and so forth. So welcome aboard. As ever and always, our number is toll-free, 800-313-9443. It's that simple. We have a special guest coming up in this hour. You've heard the name before, many of you have. And new timers, young people, and some of the others who just tuned in probably never heard of this gentleman. He is one of the most, shall we say, controversial figures of the last century, and this one, in the footsteps of great men like Ezra Pound. He is none other than Eustace Mullins, author of many books, and also speaker and student of history. Hello, Mr. Mullins. How are you, sir? I know you're there, somewhere on this network band. Are you there? Did he disappear, Paul? He disappeared? Well, anyway, that is our guest, Eustace Mullins. You know, as a college lad, I first came across the name of Eustace Mullins, and I guess I read a book called The Lightning Over the Federal Reserve. Lightning, imagine, over the Federal Reserve, long before Secrets of the Federal Reserve, and long before G. Edward Griffin's book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. Well, that's who our guest is, Eustace Mullins. As I say, a real scholar in his own right, someone who has suffered from persecution and certainly had a lot of opposition. And in fact, it's interesting to note some of the problems he's had. So we'll welcome you aboard and you to call in as the program progresses. I guess you're there now. Hello, Eustace Mullins. How are you?
Oh, hi there.
Good to talk to you. First time ever.
Oh, yes. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I am, too. And I just mentioned some of your works, like The Lightning Over the Federal Reserve. I believe that was one of your first books.
Secrets of the Federal Reserve.
Well,
Lightning Over the Treasury Building is much earlier.
That's the one.
That goes back to the 1930s.
My
goodness.
And here I was reading it in the 1970s. How do you like that?
Oh, my goodness, it's still around.
Well, yeah, it's been around, and somehow it's been picked up and republished over the years, although not lately. It's one of the books that I first read about you, and you're right, Lightning Over the Treasury. Secrets of the Federal Reserve is another, and in this hour, I hope to be able to talk very candidly with you and our listeners about some of the things that you stand for. So stay where you are. We're going to take our first break, Eustace Mullins, and we'll be right back with you and our audience. Uncensored Radio Free America, and I'm your radio avenger, Rick Adams. Theme song, that must be Radio Avenger, And it is I, Rick Adams, your radio Avenger, the Paul Revere of talk radio, and here on rbnlive.com and a host of great stations. I'd like to again say thank you very much for coming on the show. Eustace Mullins, boy, you've been around for a long time, huh?
I really have. I can't believe it myself.
Now, I'm on a website that deals with, obviously, your book, Secrets of the Federal Reserve, and also the acknowledgments that you have given to two great Americans. And one is George Stimson, another is Ezra Pound. Tell us about these two gentlemen first.
Well, my mother used to claim that Ezra Pound ruined my life. Because, of course, when I read and published the Federal Reserve book, I came under a lot of heat. And have ever since. That's
uh-huh.
true.
Well, now, how about George Stimson?
Well, George Stimson was a very distinguished man, one of the founders of the Press Club. And George was the considered the most the greatest raconteur in Washington. And he furnished jokes and stories to a lot of other columnists throughout Washington.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I think of other great people. Was it Gary Garrett? You remember him?
Not offhand.
Well, you know, he wrote the book The People's Pottage, and he was a newspaper man.
Oh, yes. Yeah, People's Pottage is
right,
a great book.
Right. Now, he of course, exposed the Roosevelt administration and what that thing was up to and all of the harm it brought both internationally as well as domestically. And, of course, you know, like most others, he sort of got the backhand of the establishment media and the powers that be. And I guess you haven't been an exception. Now, when you're, I guess your first book came out, I mean, the one that I read first anyway, Lightning Over the Treasury, that book, I guess, was, and you were panned by the Anti-Defamation League. Yet in that book, you never mentioned anything about Jews, or is that right?
Oh, no, indeed. That book has been attacked regularly ever since it was published because the Anti-Defamation League calls it a virulently anti-Semitic book, which no one has been able to find anything anti-Semitic in it.
Well, now, that raises the question then, why was the ADL so frightened of your book? What was in it that made them so scared and resort to these tactics?
Well, you know, Senator Herbert Lehman, who was one of the biggest bankers mm-hmm. in the United States, the Lehman Brothers,
mm-hmm.
He personally had me fired from the staff of the Library of Congress.
Yes, I see that.
And I'm the only person to this day who's ever been fired from the Library of Congress for political reasons. And I wasn't even in politics.
And how did that come about? I mean, what did you do right to get fired?
Well, I was the American correspondent for a little London newspaper called The Social Creditor, which promoted the social credit movement. And mm-hmm. Ezra Pound was a great follower of the mm-hmm. Social Credit Movement, and he was a friend of Major C.H. Douglas, its founder.
Mm-hmm.
So I became a correspondent and wrote articles for this paper, which has never circulated in the United States. But
uh-huh.
somehow they found a copy of it, and they said that they didn't agree with what I was writing, so they had me fired from the Library of Congress.
you were a fellow traveler then, huh?
Well, I guess so. I traveled right out of there.
Goodness, my goodness, incredible, huh?
Well, oh, yeah.
And they talk about you know, guilt by association. I guess you were one of the victims on the
well,
right.
You know, a German edition of this Federal Reserve book mm-hmm. was published in Germany in 10,000 copies, and it was burned on orders of the government of federal Germany, and James Conant, who was then the ambassador of the United States to the German Republic.
Mm-hmm. What year was that?
1955. They burned the entire edition of 10,000 copies, and this poor guy that put up the money for it, practically all the money he had.
Wait a minute. You know, this is incredible. Here they are book burning. Doesn't that harken back to another era in Germany's past?
Well, book burning supposedly ended when Adolf Hitler was deposed.
Uh-huh.
He came to the end of his time.
But not so, you're saying, huh?
Oh, it's not so. This is the only book that has been burned in Europe since 1945.
Wow. Well, today, you know, they just ban them and send them back or destroy them in other ways, or they prosecute people for writing books that
well,
are not...
Well, they prosecute them, yes.
Yeah, politically correct or...
In fact, I have friends in Germany right now that are... Mm-hmm. In jail for political reasons.
One of them is Ernest Sundell, I'll bet.
Oh, Ernest Sundell, he's a great guy.
Yeah, now, for those who don't know, Ernest Zundel was basically prosecuted because he didn't agree with a party line on the World War and on how Nazism came about and what really happened. I guess he just didn't follow every jot and tittle, huh?
Well, the thing is, the Nazi regime was supposed to be anti-Jewish, but it was entirely financed by Max Warburg and Max Oppenheimer, mm-hmm. two of the biggest Jewish bankers in Germany.
Uh-huh.
Well, and they should have been tried as war criminals after the World War II, but of course they were not.
You never hear about those Jewish collaborators that at the very top, the apex, put Hitler in power, huh?
Oh, yes. Well, for many years, a myth was circulating in this country that German industrialists put Adolf Hitler into power. And then finally a guy named Poole wrote a book about the men behind Hitler, mm-hmm. and he proved that there were no German industrialists involved at all in backing the Nazi regime, that it was backed by German bankers and later by American bankers.
Yeah, from New York, huh?
John Foster Dulles and Alan Dulles, the founder of our Central Intelligence Agency, they were two brothers who were lawyers with a New York firm called Sullivan & Cromwell. And this was the banker's law firm in Wall Street. And so they went to Germany in 1933 and bailed Hitler out. He was absolutely bankrupt at that time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And going back to the Bolshevik Revolution, we had the Bush family involved.
Deeply involved.
Yeah, we had a bunch of the $20 billion, was it, of gold bullion that was brought there in the... in 1933, Roosevelt rescued Stalin. So I'm telling you, all these socialists and communists and internationalists would never have been able to make it if it weren't for the good old American taxpayer to the rescue and the banks, huh?
Well, the first instance of that, I'm talking to you from Stanton, Virginia, which is the birthplace of Woodrow Wilson. Mm-hmm. And Woodrow Wilson sent $100 million of his emergency war fund to fight World War I. And he sent $100 million of that money through his Secretary of State, Elihu Root, to Russia to bail out the Bolsheviks, who were absolutely broke at that time, and they were about to collapse. And he bailed them out with American taxpayers' money. Woodrow Wilson bailed them out in 1917, and they kept going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're still going, by the way.
And they're still going.
Today, with American taxpayers' dollars, they've got, after Bretton Woods in World War II, they got the IMF, the World Bank, and all these other lending, so-called lending agencies that manage to finance these wars all over the globe, you know?
Well, J.P. Morgan was always denounced by the communists as a terrible capitalist banker, and J.P. Morgan actually kept the Bolshevik regime alive through the 1920s through his partner, Dwight Morrow, who was the father-in-law of Charles Lindbergh, whose own father had tried to keep the Federal Reserve Act from being passed.
Yeah, that was Father Lindbergh, the old man.
Yeah, that was Senior, so Charles Lindbergh Senior.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I remember something along the lines. His words were, once this system goes into place, meaning the Federal Reserve, we will be able to engineer depressions, recessions, and collapse, and then recovery. Something to that effect. You know?
Oh, yes. And, that was absolutely true. And he was a brilliant lawyer, by the way, mm-hmm. and he really understood the Federal Reserve Act. And he put his career on the line to stop the passage of the Federal Reserve Act, and he was drummed right out of Congress.
Oh, absolutely.
He was never reelected.
You know, you think of guys like Martin Dies and McCarthy and others who every time they started to expose this evil malaise and conspiracy in government under a Republican or Democrat, they always wound up being the enemy, and had to be stopped.
And they still denounce them. They still call Joe McCarthy is the most evil man in American history.
Well,
you'll never see a good word about Joe McCarthy in the paper.
Well, that ought to prove something about how good he was, how much of a statesman he was, and that tells you something right there, the virulence of the hatred.
Well, I'm writing a book about him. He's one of the greatest Americans of our history.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, Eisenhower said that he was said to have hated McCarthy just as much as he hated the Germans and Hitler. So that again tells you a lot about Eisenhower, how corrupt corrupt and despicable he was, especially in the war.
Well, Eisenhower almost was handed the greatest defeat of his life, because when Joe McCarthy came to permanent prominence in the United States by fighting communism, Eisenhower was backed into a corner. He had nowhere to go.
Mm-hmm. Had Patton lived, Eisenhower would never have become president, by the way.
Never.
Never. In fact, he would have probably been hanged.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know, that's something people should know. We'll tell you why, by the way, when we come back from our break. And someone was on the line, a couple of you, and I know you had to drop off because we haven't really invited callers yet. But let's do that now. We're talking with Eustace Mullins, author of many books. 800-313-9443 is our number. I'm Rick Adams, your radio avenger, and, of course, he's with us for as long as he can stay with us tonight, and we'll be happy to take your calls, comments, and questions with author Eustace Mullins tonight, because he's got a busy week ahead, as he'll tell you, coming up. All right, again, the number, 800-313-9443, to be on Uncensored Radio Free America, proudly on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Those of you online listening, it's rbnlive.com. And those of you who listen on a number of stations, it's all the same. Rick Adams. We'll be right back with our guest and your phone call, so stay with us.
East and West, which is now in its 326th year, has at last come to an end.
And we are back. Rick Adams with you on Uncensored Radio Free America. Our guest tonight is none other than Eustace Mullins, as he said, gentlemen and ladies, he was the only one from the Library of Congress ever to be fired. Well, he's also, by the way, a veteran of the U.S. Air Force and 38 months of active service in World War II. A native Virginian, he came from or was educated at Washington and Lee Universities, New York University, Ohio University, University of North Dakota, the various and sundry other institutes. I guess I can't even pronounce some of the names here, but the original book was under the title Mullins on the Federal Reserve, commissioned by the poet Ezra Pound in 1948. By the way, Ezra was a political prisoner himself, I guess, wasn't he, Mr. Mullins?
Not only that, he was held without trial for 13 and a half years, and finally the government dropped all charges against him because they never had a case against him.
And when did these charges, and under whose administration did they begin?
Well, he was indicted by Alger Hiss, who was a specialist on treason.
Mm-hmm.
And Alger Hiss had him indicted for treason because he broadcast from Italy, where he was marooned during World War II.
That's
he
Mr.
tried
Pound.
To come back to the United States, mm-hmm. and they said that he was persona non grata with the U.S. government, which was a total fabrication.
And the guy that indicted him was a communist. Alger Hiss, a Soviet agent.
Oh, yes.
And, of course, at the time, no one knew that, right?
Well, no one. Well, yes,
no
it was
one
all
admitted
over Washington,
it.
As a matter of fact. A.A.
Yeah.
Burrell and many of the prominent people knew in Washington knew all about Alger Hiss's activities as an
mm-hmm.
agent.
Mm-hmm.
But they never went public with it.
I'm pretty sure Roosevelt knew, because after all, Roosevelt said some of his best friends were communists, if you remember.
Well, General Donovan, who founded the CIA as the OSS during World War II, J. Edgar Hoover went to President Roosevelt and complained that Donovan was staffing the OSS with communists.
Uh-huh.
And FDR called in Donovan, and he said, Edgar is complaining about your having so many communists in the OSF. And did you know they were communists? He said, certainly I knew they were communists. That's why I hired them.
To which Roosevelt undoubtedly applauded.
Well, yes, he was in perfect agreement.
Absolutely, absolutely. So you know, Ezra Pound, like many others before him, was a patriot, and so he had to pay a price, just as Charles Lindbergh himself, see, a junior, I believe.
Well, so many people, McCarthy paid a price.
Yep.
And that's been a terrible ordeal for them.
Yep.
I tell you, I would have let a dog sleep for one night in the room that Ezra had at St. Elizabeth's for 13 and a half years. It was like a closet. It would have given me permanent claustrophobia for the rest of my life.
One would think with the name St. Elizabeth, it'd be a nice institution and a safe environment, religion, and so forth. I guess that was not the case, was it, with Mr. Pound?
Well, St. Elizabeth itself is on a knoll overlooking the Capitol, as I pointed out in my biography of Ezra Pound, as published in 1959.
Mm-hmm.
I said, it's the most impressive elevation in the entire city of Washington, and it looks right down on the U.S. Capitol.
Absolutely. Now, you know, when you got started and you started exposing certain instruments of communism, I think by putting your finger on one of the most important of the 10 planks of Marxism, the Federal Reserve System, you virtually guaranteed you were going to have a lot of trouble in life, you know.
Well, I didn't know it at the time, but when I first visited Ezra in 1948, the FBI immediately opened a file on me because he was under indictment for a federal crime.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they kept me under a daily surveillance for 33 years.
They kept you under surveillance daily?
Daily surveillance.
For 33 years.
Oh, yes. And they caused me so much trouble, I finally sued them in court, and I got a $50 million default judgment against them because they wouldn't even answer the case. And so
the government wouldn't answer the case, huh?
Oh, no, they won't. They won't fight a case. And because they had no justification for paying any attention to me whatsoever. I never got a parking ticket in my life.
Sounds like old man Artie Wheeler down there in Baltimore's looking.
Oh, Artie is a good friend of mine.
Oh, he is.
Perfect guy, yeah.
Oh, he'll be on tomorrow night again to tell us about his ordeal. He had a visit, ladies and gentlemen, Artie Wheeler did, as you know, by the FBI recently after he named the Bushes and the CIA in 9/11 and sent that tape and book and CD to the judge whose husband and mother were murdered, Judge Lefkoe, and also sent it to members of Congress. Now he's got another visit. Artie just had another visit by three other agents, and we'll have him tell you about them tomorrow night. But right now, we're talking with Eustace Mullins, and now's the time to open up the lines. We've given a fairly good introduction, and I want you, the listener now, to come right aboard, and we promise you we'll take you in order, the order which you come, and we'll put you on just as quickly as we can. So, again, that number is 800-313-9443. Toll free from anywhere. And we know we got a lot of people listening all over this country and beyond on the Internet. So give us a jingle. I'm Rick Adams, Radio Avenger. We'll be right back with Eustace Mullins.
Listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
The nighttime ride of the Paul Revere of Talk Radio, Uncensored Radio Free America. Rick Adams is back.
And we are back, and yes, Eustace Mullins is here as our guest, and we'll take your phone calls for him. He's an expert on the Federal Reserve. Now, last week we had on, as you know, Alex Perry Jr. He also has talked about money and real money, gold and silver, versus the fiat that we call paper today. And, you know, I read the press every day and see what's happening to the economy and complaints about NAFTA and defense of NAFTA, so-called free trade agreements. In your opinion, Eustace, is this all part and parcel of the same ball of wax that we're dealing with here, the Federal Reserve?
Paul Warburg, who was the author of the Federal Reserve Act in 1910, he actually was president of the International Acceptance Corporation, which is the biggest money changer in the world, and acceptances were international loans.
Uh-huh.
Any kind of international paper was called acceptance. Mm-hmm. And he was the biggest acceptance banker in the world, and that's why he wanted the Federal Reserve, because he said he wanted an elastic currency. Well, you know, an elastic currency is like a rubber check. That's what he wanted. That's why we've got a $7 trillion debt right now, because we got the elastic currency that Paul Warburg wanted.
Yeah, that elasticity. And I remember playing with elastics when I was young in school, and I got into trouble for it.
Oh, yeah.
These guys get rewarded for it.
Yeah, they've gotten plenty of rewards.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this. I mean, is there a country today, outside up until now, this invasion of the Middle East that we've been responsible for, has there been a country in most parts of the world where there is not a central bank?
Well, you know, Germany and Italy, their cause of World War II was that Hitler and Mussolini went off the central banking system. And that was the only cause for World War II. And go to history books, you won't find any other reason.
It's all about the money, isn't it, huh?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so much for the love of the poor oppressed, huh? You mean the poor oppressed bankers at the top, right?
Oh, yes.
Well, now, that's interesting because, as I say, I don't know of many countries today that don't have a central banking system through which they have to pay interest on the pleasure of renting money.
Well, and it's money that is printed by the central bank, because the first task of a central bank, the first commission of a central bank, is the right to issue money, to print money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all it is. It's a bank that prints money.
Mm-hmm. Well, really, paper called money, I know.
Well, it's paper called money, but when they print a $100 bill, you pay $100 bill. You pay $100 up front for that bill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, incredible. I mean, it's pure plunder, isn't it?
It is plunder. And in fact, I'm going to revise my Federal Reserve book and point out that we switched to a criminal system. You know, I say in my Federal Reserve book, and that's been circulated for many years and never been denied, that the Federal Reserve system is not a system at all. It's a criminal syndicate.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, I mean, they talk about prosecuting organized crime. Well, if they really wanted to, you know where they'd start, right?
Well, that's the real organization behind all crime now today.
You talk in your book quite a bit, in several chapters, at least one in particular, and it's recurrent throughout the book because it's like talking about spheres and the earth, you know, or wet water. It needs to be obviously connected. The House of Rothschild, Chapter 5, that you dealt with, beginning on page 47, that's quite an incredible chapter about the Lord Rothschild family going way back, centuries ago in Europe, huh?
Oh, certainly. And Paul Warburg himself, the author of our Federal Reserve System, was actually brought up in the Rothschild office in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
He was a Rothschild employee.
Now, for those of you, I'm sure you know the whole history of it, but I'm a little bit foggy on this. The Rothschild family, was it Nathan was the ancient patriarch of the family, the old man?
It was founded by Amschel
Meyer. Okay, Amschel Rothschild. Right.
But there was a Nathaniel Mayer Rothschild who became the head of the Bank of London. And he was the head of the British branch of the Rothschild. He became the most powerful member of the family.
Now, didn't he, that is Amschel Rothschild, the father, send all of his sons, banking sons, out into each of the countries to instigate for a central bank?
Oh, yes. He had five sons, and he established them in every capital in Europe. And from there, they moved on to control the entire world, and they have ever since.
Now, World War One was, again, an example of the power of this elite group of bankers. How did they bring about World War One? Tell us.
Well, nobody has ever been able to establish a cause for World War One, mm-hmm. And some of the finest historians of the world spent many years studying it, and they can't find a cause for World War One. And that's simple, because it was a real simple explanation that the British Empire could not compete with the rising German high-quality production. And that's mm-hmm. why we had two World Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the only reason.
That is fascinating, this rivalry now. And you've got these banking families exploiting that rivalry and actually financing France and England against Germany.
Oh, yes, they did that all the time.
Yeah.
And during World War One and World War Two, our Air Force would not bomb certain factories which belonged to the other side.
Mm-hmm. Which side was that?
They were on both sides. But you see, at the
end
of
the Farbens? You mean the IG Farbens?
Oh, IG Farben. Well, you see, when the Allied military government, after World War II, set up its headquarters at IG Farben in Frankfurt, Germany, which was the only building left standing in Frankfurt, Germany.
Isn't that incredible, huh?
Yeah.
These people amaze me today when they rant and rave about Germany and the Holocaust, and they talk about why, how come we didn't bomb these so-called death camps sooner, and the rail cars that carry them off and so forth, and yet they never mention the fact that this one factory, this one company, was totally untouched throughout that whole situation.
Oh, it was unscathed.
Yeah.
It was the only building that the Allied military government could set up a shop in, because it was totally perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just mind-boggling, Eustace.
Well, it is mind-boggling. When you see the fleets of B-17s that are flying over Germany every day, and they never could hit the IG Farben building.
Well, maybe they didn't have a good eye there.
Yeah.
they just didn't have enough surveillance, as they say. Aerial surveillance. No.
Well, anyhow, somebody may have told them not to bomb it, too.
One of the things, though, in World War One that sparked the American entry was the American passengers on the Lusitania, right?
Oh,
and
yes.
That thing was a setup from beginning to end, wasn't it?
Oh, well, George Sylvester Viery, who represented the German government for a while, showed me ads which were placed in the New York Times warning Americans not to take passage on the Lusitania because it was a Venetian's carrying ship.
Yeah.
And they
right.
actually, the New York Times actually carried those ads warning people not to get on that ship.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. The thing is, the newspapers that were the Germans had attempted to buy a lot of advertising in, I understand they were owned also through surrogates of the Rothschilds.
Oh, yes.
So they couldn't even buy advertising in many newspapers, save a few, and that was insufficient to get the word out, apparently, that the British were using that ship as an armament-carrying ship.
Oh, yeah, so J.P. Morgan, who was a Rothschild agent, put together the syndicate that built the New York Times up into the greatest newspaper in the world. And he set up the whole deal.
That's a laugh and a half, isn't it, huh?
Oh, yeah.
When you think about it, we talk about the New York Times. I talk about them all the time, and the media whores, as we call them, the prostitutes of the press. They weren't alone, though. You had Harvard and all these other institutions where the actual chairman of the departments of history, poli-sci, and so forth were actually bought. I mean, the departments were bought with these huge grants and monies that came in that established them in the first place.
Oh, yeah. And a chairman of these departments would publish these enormous books, very expensive
uh-huh.
books,
yeah.
and they would be bestsellers. They'd been in every library in the United States.
Yep. And meanwhile, other books were being taken out of the library.
Oh, yeah.
Including...
And other writers couldn't get their books published at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember, I'd go to the Providence Public Library here in Rogue Island, and I'd look there on the shelves, and I'd see one or two books, against Keynesian economics, for instance, by the gold school people and great people like von Mises and others. And then I'd go down the other shelf, and I'd see about 50 books about how great Lord Keynes was and Keynesian economics, And I knew there weren't just two books written by people who are hard money advocates, you see.
Well, not only that, there's hundreds of books over Marxism.
Oh, yeah.
Because Karl Marx is still their god.
Well, what happened, though, you see, what happened in my case, Eustace, was I approached the libraries and the Library Association, and if you ever want to find a nest of communists and leftists and socialists, that's where to go. They want to get the control over the literary access so that the average John Q. public does not know what books are available or not, you see. So I approached them, and I said, well, what gives here? And, well, you know, if you want to get us to buy certain books, we'll do that. If you want to donate them, fine, we'll put them on the shelves. And I did, and they did. And within 6 months, those darn books were in the for sale pile.
Oh, yes, they didn't keep them.
No, you bet your life they didn't.
Well, when I was the only person ever fired from the staff of the Library of Congress for political reasons, I applied to the American Library Association,
uh-huh.
which was directed by a lady named Judith Krug,
uh-huh.
and I wrote her about doing something about not being fired or getting reinstated. I wanted to be reinstated because I hadn't done anything. Well, they refused to touch that case to this day.
uh-huh.
I corresponded with them for 25 years about that case.
Is that right?
And they would never touch it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I guess censorship does exist on the left, though, huh?
Oh, yes. That's a one-way censorship.
mm-hmm. Yeah. And you found out the hard way throughout most of your life. Now,
well, I certainly did.
Yeah, I mean, here you are, a political prisoner in the country that's supposed to be the freest on the face of the earth. And,
well, I tried to sue the Library of Congress after I was fired to try to get my job back.
Yeah.
And a federal judge threw the case out.
How did that happen?
Well, I don't know, because he dismissed it without a hearing.
Well, now, what kind of legal representation did you have?
Well, I represented myself.
Oh, well, that's not a good thing, you know.
Well, it's suicide.
In the American system,
in the American court without a highly paid attorney, you're just in bad shape.
Yeah, well, that's a first strike against us, isn't it, huh?
Well, you see, Michael Jackson doesn't have any cheap attorney handling his case.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably going to cost him $5 million.
Yeah. Right. If it's worth it to him, though, I mean, to get off, you know, we'll see what happens. But your case was so typical of many that I know, people who go in pro se and wind up getting the short end of the stick in every case.
Oh, they really love to see me come in because it gave them a chance to throw me out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they've done it every time.
Yep. Well, by the way, we're talking with Eustace Mullins, ladies and gentlemen. He's been on Jack McLam's program, a number of programs right here on RBN. And if you'd like to jingle and tickle the phone, go right ahead. 800-313-9443. Now's the time to jump aboard, because I know I can go on all night with questions about Eustace. As I say, Eustace, I came across your name, gee, when I was a lad. I mean, just in college years in the early 70s, and one of the first books I that caught my eye was your book, you know, on the Treasury. And you were writing about things that most people, Americans, didn't know about the treachery, you know, that followed World War II, and the Treasury Department and the infamous Morgenthau, Secretary of the Treasury under Roosevelt, right?
Oh, yes. Well, Ezra Pound actually sent me to the Library of Congress to see what I could find out about the Federal Reserve System. And I had never heard of the Federal Reserve System. And the only reason Ezra sent me was because he was locked up by the federal government and he couldn't go himself.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just acting as an emissary of Ezra Pound and going there and looking up the Federal Reserve System.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what happened?
And, well, it blew his mind when I came back with all the material I had. He had never, in his wildest dreams, realized what a corrupt thing it was.
Now, for those who were looking for a sequence here and say, well, that was like 40, 50, 60 years ago, what about today? Surely George Bush is an honest man. He carries a Bible. He says he's a Christian. Why, he even smiles and kisses babies. He can't be all that bad. He can't be a pawn in the game of the Fed and the internationalists. Now, can he?
Well, you know, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, Wall Street and the Rise of Bolshevism, there's mm-hmm. two books by Tony Sutton,
right.
who was a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
And he gives the whole background of the Bushes and everybody in their connections with Nazism and financing Bolshevism.
Mm-hmm. So you think Baby Bush today, George Bush, has a little bit of guilt to bear about all of this?
Well, I don't know, but I think he's carrying on a family tradition.
Oh, wow. You mean he's been handed the torch, huh?
Oh, he certainly has.
And he's been carrying the torch with him. Well, that's fairly obvious, isn't it?
Well, it certainly is. The record is an open book.
These wars that we've seen now, they've never ended since World War I, have they? All
never.
These so-called wars for democracy.
Well, they're wars for democracy, and they're also wars of a country which is the only superpower in the world, and it's attacking some of the smallest countries in the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, countries that can't defend themselves, right?
Oh, of course not. Yeah. Iraq couldn't defend itself against the United States. And we want to talk, well, they're ready to attack Iran tomorrow because they say someday Iran might have a nuclear bomb.
Mm-hmm.
That's called hypothetical.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, North Korea's already got the bomb, and we've been dancing and waltzing with them for a long time. Well, China, of course, is our great ally, you know. We wouldn't want to offend the Chinese and the communists, now, would we?
No, not at all, but Israel has more atomic weapons than either China or North Korea, and we never question the fact that Israel has atomic weapons.
Yeah, but you're picking on those poor guys over there. Poor Ariel Sharon.
They're just trying to defend themselves.
I mean, look, that's right. They're trying to defend themselves against the children with stones there, you know. They got to shoot them down, kill them, poison them, take their water, their land, take everything they've got, because that's defense. Didn't you know that?
And now they've built a fence so that they can't, the people that live there, the original inhabitants, can't even visit their own relatives.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's, again, that's called democracy, right? And we don't hear little bucktooth Condoleezza Rice talking about that. Now, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
All right, we'll be back. Eustace Mullen, stay where you are. All right, you got a question? Call in now. Don't be shy. We'll be right back. I'm Rick Adams, and Radio Avenger will continue.
It's irrevocable, cannot be changed. I wonder.
All right. Hey, we're back. Rick Adams, Uncensored, Radio Free America. And with me is Eustace Mullins, 800-313-9443. And let's say hello to Smitty in South Carolina. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. Say hello to Eustace.
Yeah, Eustace.
Hello there.
Look here, I'd love to know how you get a copy of that book that you said can't get no more.
Yeah.
Yep. How do you do that, Eustace? Can we get a copy?
Oh, yeah, I still have copies of the Federal Reserve book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's been updated 5 times.
How do they get it from you? How do they do that, Eustace?
Well, they can order it for me here in Stanton, Virginia, where I'm talking from.
Okay.
And it's at 126 Madison Place. And I'll ship the book right out to them.
And what city are you in now?
Stanton, S-T-A-U-N-T-O-N. That's the birthplace of Woodrow Wilson.
Yep. Okay. The zip code?
24401.
All right. And Smitty, another question for him?
No, he needs to talk to over.
What's that?
Could you repeat the address again?
Yeah, could you repeat the address? And by the way, is there a phone number or somehow they can get you a little easier?
I have a website.
Oh, go ahead then. Give that, too.
Which is www.eustacemullins.com.
All right. That's your own website here, huh?
My own website. And it has my other books that are available. And so you can see the whole thing right there.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you the address, and so you can get everything off of that.
Now, just in case there's somebody out there who's new and doesn't know, they've heard your name even many times, they don't know how to spell your name, why don't you spell your name so they can get on the website?
Oh, it's M-U-L-L-I-N-S.
That's your last name, but your first name, Eustace.
My first name is Eustace, which is ancient Aramaic for justice.
Uh-huh.
And Eustace is E-U-S-T-A-C-E.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Smitty, another question or a comment?
No. Well, I think I've certainly enjoyed the program.
Well, thank you very kindly. It's been a pleasure.
You have a very interesting guest.
Yep.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I covet your support. And we appreciate it, Smitty. Thank you. Well, see, Eustace, you got a lot of people out there that support you and like what you're doing. I guess most people, when they really stop to think about it, realize the truth, and no one's refuted really anything you've said all these years.
I've never been challenged on anything. It's really amazing. Nobody's ever challenged one. In fact, most of the material from my book I got at the Library of Congress from official government documents. And that is why nobody's ever been able to challenge anything.
It works every time, doesn't it, huh?
It really does.
Yeah, they don't like the truth, especially when it comes right from the source.
Yeah.
That's amazing. All right. Now, can you stay with us a little bit for the second hour?
Oh, yes, that'd be
good.
All right.
All right, let's stay at least for a while, and then we'll give people a chance to call in and ask a question or a comment.
Oh, that'd be perfect.
Yeah, great, because the Federal Reserve System is... unfortunately, as I say, it's growing more and more every day. It's destroying the value of our so-called currency, and that means it's destroying everything we've worked for, ladies and gentlemen. Spread the word. Get the word out. The enemy is here, not overseas. That's for sure. And we will return our number two coming up. Again, with Eustace Mullins, and then open conversation. A lot of things I'd like to talk about as well tonight, so don't be shy. Jump on the line. And we will return with more on RBNLive.com and a host of stations. I'm Rick Adams.
Listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
The Radio Adventure gets even better.
Live, uncensored, Radio Free America.
Another exciting, informative hour is warming up. Rick Adams is on fire.
Hey, I like that chainsaw there, Paul. I like that chainsaw. Some heads have to come off, huh? All right, we're back. Hour number two of Uncensored Radio Free America. Our number toll-free, 800-313-9443. And I'm Rick Adams, your radio avenger, and we are avenging history, ladies and gentlemen. And boy, it's true, Eustace, the last century, it seems like more evil has been done in the name of good than had been done for 2,000 years. I mean, they talk about the Crusades and all of the medieval murders and so forth, but you consider that between 1913 and now, well over about 200 million people have been killed by these people, these banksters and their wars.
Well, it's been a very profitable operation.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you think of not only the world wars, but what followed. And, China, Mao Zedong, brought to power by the stroke of a pen at our State Department. Treason, right there in Washington, brought him to power. And
well, that's
64
what,
million
that's what
people.
Started Joe McCarthy on his crusade, because that wasn't going on.
Yeah, he described it as 20 years of treason under the Democrats, and yet he ain't seen anything until Eisenhower came along. And, you know, when Eisenhower was president, this is something that, like you say, cannot be denied. Here we saw under the Soviet orbit that went Soviet, partly because of Eisenhower right there in the field, and Patton had his number pretty darn good. But here under his administration, you remember what happened in Hungary?
Oh, yes.
In 1956.
He turned his back on the Hungarian people.
Yeah, yeah.
And that brought in a big wave of immigration to the United States. A lot of the Hungarians emigrated to the United States and became very good citizens here.
Mm-hmm. Many Many didn't make it, though, that's for sure.
Oh, a lot of them were killed.
Yeah, okay, let's see. I think we've got John in London, Ontario, wants to speak to you. So, I'm sorry, Tom in London, Ontario. Hi, you're on the program with our guest here, Eustace Mullins. Hello there.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Yes.
They taught me a lot of things in school, like reading, writing, arithmetic, where babies come from. But they never actually taught us where money comes from. So my question to Mr. Mullins is, how do you envision the financial system working? Like, how and when should money get created? Who should have control over it? And things like, should charging interest on money be legal, etc.?
Excellent questions.
The central bank is the key to the whole money question, and the central bank, with its right to print money, is the key to the whole operation. And I lectured for 4 hours in a court in Vernon, British Columbia, a few years ago, and I got a Canadian citizen off when the Canada Revenue was going to take everything he had, his home and his ranch and everything, because I was introduced as the world's leading authority on the central bank. The Crown attorney didn't want me to talk. And so he said, well, what credentials does Mr. Mullins have? And so the attorney said, well, he's the world's leading authority on the central bank. So the judge allowed me to proceed.
And you did.
I did, for 4 hours.
Wow. Does that answer your question there, John?
Well, not really. I just like to see, for example, if someone creates a product, that product has to be compensated through the creation of money. How exactly is that supposed to work? Or not even a product, say, for example, an idea is worth something too, right?
Oh, it certainly is.
So how should that be compensated in money?
Oh, well, that's been a lot of argument over the years. Nobody really agrees on what should be money. I mean, Pacific...
All right, hold that thought there. You stay on the line too, Tom, and I'll be right back with you, Eustace, and you can answer that question. But we got to take a break quickly, and we'll be right back with more Uncensored Radio Free America with Rick Adams. Second hour of Uncensored Radio Free America right here on Republic Broadcasting System or Network. And, of course, we have with us Eustace Mullins. Are you still there, Tom, from Ontario? London, Ontario. All right. Now, has Eustace answered your question about money?
Not really. What I'd like to know is, like, if you can give me an example of a creation of money in a small, closed society. How should that work? I still don't understand the whole process of creation, how it should circulate, should interest be charged, who should control all that.
Okay, try once again now, Eustace.
Well, in Ithaca, in upstate New York State, they have their own money system there. They've been printing their own money and using it in that immediate area for quite a few years, and any community can actually do that. You know, there's no law against your printing your own money anywhere in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
The law is that if you counterfeit a Federal Reserve note,
right,
which is counterfeit in the first place, that you could go to prison for that.
Of course, I understand that. So basically you're saying anybody can create their own exchange notes, let's not call it money, and exchange it between people that are willing to exchange it.
Willing parties, yeah.
It's a medium of exchange. That's exactly what money is.
And, you know, people would voluntarily exchange it. I'm sure you would agree to that, right, Tom?
Oh, of course.
Anything of value, right? You say, well, a dollar bill, you can't buy a cup of coffee now for a dollar bill anymore. You got to pay $1.50, $2. And if you had gold, well, you'd still be paying a nickel or a dime.
Oh, yes.
So there's the problem. The problem is the Federal Reserve note, right?
The Federal Reserve note, which is created out of nothing. I found congressional testimony in which officials of the Federal Reserve System were asked, how did they create their money? And they said, we created it out of nothing.
Mm-hmm. I know that. I went to the bank to obtain a credit line, and they punched in some numbers in, like, my income expenses, and right off the bat, I got $10,000.
My goodness.
There you go. There you go. Now, how's the situation where you are in London, Ontario, economically?
Well, financially, I'm pretty well off, but they're trying to keep my mouth shut. I got a case with the CHRC right now for my internet postings, but that's another story. One last quick question. Do you think it should be legal to charge interest on money?
Okay, answer that question. Should
it
be legal?
Well, according to the Muslim religion, it is illegal to charge interest or usury. And Ezra Pound campaigned for most of his life against usury or the charging of interest. So that's been a religious question for 2,000 years, whether you should choose, charge interest or not, or usury. And Christ himself, you know, turned over the tables of the money changers in the temple.
They turned it into a den of thieves, didn't they?
Oh, yes.
And they're still doing it today, by the way,
the Federal Reserve System is a den of thieves. I've said that for years.
Yeah, and you know, he points out a good thing. Thank you for the call, Tom. The usury is something that was always condemned in the Mohammedan world.
Oh, yes.
And, of course, now George Bush has gotten our nose into there. Guess what? We're going to establish a whole new currency for them with new controls and total and complete occupation. It's called democracy, by the way. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the real world. All right, let's take some more calls. We've got Bill in Idaho. Hi, you're on the program, Bill.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Yes, sir.
I've got a quick question. Well, actually, I have two questions for you.
Okay.
First one is... as far as the Federal Reserve, what is it that ties the U.S. citizen to the Federal Reserve system?
Well, nothing. It's a public law of Congress, actually, and that's the only reason they're allowed to operate. It's a delegation of constitutional authority. You see, the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, actually originally intended for the Congress to issue the money, and they delegated that authority to a private bank, which is what the Federal Reserve System is.
Mm-hmm.
And the Federal Reserve Government has never, the federal government has never owned one share of Federal Reserve stock.
Well, basically, what I'm asking is what ties us to having to pay them? Is it the W-4 contract when you take on employment? Is it the Social Security? What is it that really ties us to it?
Well, it's the whole bureaucracy is geared to tie us to it.
So there's no way around them.
Well, because if you get rid of one bureaucratic agency, you fall in the hands of another one.
Yeah.
So they're waiting for you all the time.
Well, those rascals, they knew what they were doing in the 1930s, didn't they?
Oh, they did indeed. That's why, you see, the state of Virginia, where I live, is almost totally responsible for passing the Federal Reserve Act through Congress. Because Woodrow Wilson was not a popular president, and he had no authority in Congress, and so they got another Virginian, Carter Glass, who shepherded the bill through Congress. And Carter Glass is actually the one that got it passed. And Harry Byrd took up another Virginian senator, took up after Carter Glass left.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, that kind of answered the question.
I guess that does it, huh, Bill?
Okay. Main question. I had one little, just a light question.
Go ahead.
Did Houston say he was a pilot in World War II?
No, I was in the U.S. Air Force during World War II. And I'm fond of telling people that's the last war that we won.
Yeah, I was just curious because I don't know if you're familiar with Colonel Joe, but I've talked to him a time or two, and he was a B-17 pilot.
Oh, I see. Oh, I love the old B-17s. No, I wasn't a pilot because I was too nearsighted.
Oh, okay.
That's the reason I didn't go to pilot school.
Well, you were probably very fortunate.
Well, that was all I had, gentlemen.
Thank you very much
for
calling.
I'll get out of here and let you go on.
Good hearing from you from Idaho. Thank you. All right, how about Martin in California? You're next on the program. Hello, Martin.
Hi, good evening. Good evening, Eustace.
Good evening.
Hey, it's just wonderful to hear you talk with such perspective on everything that's going on and has been going on for so many years. But there's still, for people like me who just never really caught on to this whole system until more recently, it's confusing to see some of the things going on. For instance, I don't quite understand what Putin's role is right now. Is he in with the banksters or not? And when you mentioned earlier, for instance, that Adolf Hitler bucked them, you also had said just prior to that that he was financed in 1933 by them. So I just wonder, you know, can you fill in those pieces of that puzzle?
Good questions.
Well, that's not a puzzle at all. You see, the international bankers, there was a lot of short-term debt that Germany owed them. And so they had to rescue him so they could collect the money.
And so at that point, at what point did he become rebellious?
Well, he never was rebellious, but I think that they financed Hitler to get a Second World War going in the first place. It was just a business operation.
Well, it was thesis, antithesis, and synthesis.
Oh, it certainly was.
Very simple.
Yeah.
Create two oppositions and then move forward, right?
Absolutely.
Well, do you see the same thing happening now with the power bloc of Russia and China?
Yeah, good question. Yeah.
And,
well, I think
where there will be a real showdown in the Middle East, where, you know, the United States won't be just able to march in there and take over like they did in Iraq, but where there will really be some opposition.
Well, I don't think there is that much opposition among the Middle Eastern nations. I mean, we're prepared to walk into Iran and Syria and Saudi Arabia. That's the program. They've laid it all out. It's called the program for the 21st century.
So you don't think that there's anybody that is actually going to oppose the United States in that area?
And is it real opposition? Is it real, or is it just part of the same scheme?
Well, I think it's part of the same operation.
See, I think so, too. And I disagree with some of my historian friends who say Putin is standing up to the banks. And I said, look, if he was standing up to them, he would have been dead and buried long ago.
Well, they have tried to assassinate him.
I think that's part of the game, is to make it look like, you know, he's got enough opposition that try to assassinate, what's his name there in not Afghanistan, but in Pakistan, Musharraf. And those have been set ups as well.
You mean just to make him look like
he's a brave man. He's encountered all opposition. Hey, he must be a good friend in the United States, you know. And look at what's going on in Uzbekistan right now as well.
That might have been a setup too, that poisoning. But is there anybody, let's put it this way, is there anybody that hasn't been a pawn in the game that is a prominent figure in history?
Well, it certainly looks like there have been a lot of them. Castro in Cuba is a classic example. When Castro was about to be overthrown, we sent a task force down there which supposedly was going to finish him off, and instead it united all of his support in Cuba, and he's been head of Cuba ever since.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was deliberately botched, too, the Bay of Pigs CIA scandal.
The whole thing was set up to make sure.
Set up to fail. Yes, sir.
Because Castro was on the way out. He really had no future whatsoever. And, in fact, the Bay of Pigs and all that was a rescue mission for Fidel Castro.
Good. Well, well put, my friend. You get away with words, Eustace.
Well, nobody else has ever said that. I'm the only person that's ever said that publicly.
Did John F. Kennedy try to buck them when he was going towards issuing silver certificates?
Oh, yeah. You see, John F. Kennedy, like all presidents, became concerned about his legacy, how he'd be remembered. And one of his advisors said to him, if you will get the Federal Reserve System off the backs of the American people, they'll put up a statue to you in every town in this country. And that's what got him started off, and that was his doom, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, Martin, thank you for some good questions. We'll ponder them again right after the break. And you stay where you are, Eustace Mullins, you rascal, you. I'm Rick Adams, and we'll be back with more Uncensored Radio Free America, only here on Republic Broadcasting.
Thousands of years of building and rebuilding, creating and recreating, so you can let it crumble to dust.
Yes, sir, we're letting everything crumble to dust, huh? We haven't learned from history, have we? Well, tonight we're getting an education with Eustace Mullins, and Eustace, as we've seen, is quite a prolific man. Eustace, you're over 60 years old now, aren't you, huh?
I'm 83.
And he's not ashamed to admit it. You know, you sound like a man of 50, I'll tell you that.
Well, everybody tells me that.
Bless you. I see you're going to be speaking, I guess, at a conference coming up the weekend. Is that right?
Oh, yes. It's going to be an international conference. They're coming from all over.
And who's going to be there with you now? David Duke and a bunch of people?
David Duke and a whole bunch of people.
Uh-huh. That's what, the Stormfront there, is it?
The Stormfront group, and they all got together on this, and it looks like it's going to be a great job.
Yeah. Well, they invited me, but they wouldn't pay my way, so I said, oh.
Well, they won't pay anybody's way.
I know.
They haven't got any money.
That's right. Well, they got Federal Reserve, though, but no real money, right?
No real money.
Anyway, let's go to our phones, 800-313-9443. That's our number, toll-free, to Uncensored Radio Free America. I'm your host, Rick Adams, and Joe from Rhode Island is talking right now to Eustace Mullins. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Rick. Hi, Eustace.
Hi there.
Rick, one verse from the scriptures tonight.
Surely.
Revelation chapter 17, verse 2. With whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Eustace, the World Bank just recently gave $250 billion to Brazil. I was just curious, what percentage of their funds is supplied by the United States?
Well, as far as I know,
I should say by the Christian countries of this world.
The Christian countries. Well, as far as I know, all of it is. So they have no funds of their own.
Okay. It seems to me that we're supplying the World Bank with probably 90% of its funding. And here in our own country, we're cutting educational programs, pension plans, police and fire protection.
They're cutting veterans programs, everything.
Veterans programs. You know, it seems to me that we have a balancing of the economies of the world going on.
Well, that's what
it
is.
In other words, for the world economy to work, all the nations of the world have to be on the same keel.
Called redistribution of the wealth.
Redistribution, yes, that's Karl Marx.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Well, they're actually reducing the American living standard to that of third world countries.
Yes, that has to happen for it to work, or else it's going to collapse.
Oh, yes, and it is happening.
Another question, Joe?
One other verse and a comment, Rick?
Sure, go ahead.
That same chapter 17, verse 6. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great wonder. You know, that woman is confusion today. Confusion means Babel or Babylon.
Oh, yes.
That woman of Babylon of the end times, not of Daniel's times, who is made up of that Babylon in part? Our own people implementing the martyr of the saints through their ignorance of the God's plan. And I'm going to need one more verse and quit.
Mm-hmm.
2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 3. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come except there come a falling away first. That falling away first is apostasia in the Greek.
Mm-hmm.
That's the great apostasy of the Christians of this world. So if you see you're standing in a small minority here in the end times, you're in pretty good company.
You bet you are.
And that's
good
all
company.
I got to say, Rick.
Thank you, Brother Joe. Hey, appreciate your contributions always. And that's just about a good way of rounding out this hour and a half we've had together with you, Eustace. And it's been my pleasure. I want to have you back again regularly. And our audience really appreciates what you're doing, you know.
I'll give you a report on the Orleans meeting when I get back.
Yeah, give us a report when you get back, sure. And the book, The Secrets of the Federal Reserve, and other materials, I guess they can go to your website, right?
They go right to the website. Everything is on there.
www.eustacemullins.com.
Yeah, that's right.
And again, you know, it's very easy to spell. You go on board, you'll see The Secrets of the Federal Reserve and all of his other books as well. Eustace Mullins, Eustace Mullins. My friend, it's been a pleasure. We'll have you back again.
I'll be looking forward to it.
And have a good good fellowship, good time at the conference, and we'll hear from you then.
Very good.
You get back. Bye-bye now.
Bye now.
All right. Hey, a great hour and a half with Eustace Mullins. And like I said, that's my first chance to talk to him, and we get calls from all over Canada and the United States. And in the last half hour, when we come back, we've got certainly a lot to chitty-chatty about, as old man Artie Wheeler says, and we'll do that with your calls and your participation. Anything on your mind now, you join us, because you've got time to do so. And the number, toll-free, 800-313-9443. Just dial up the phone, and we'll put you right on. Rick Adams, Radio Avenger, we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
The Nighttime Ride of the Paul Revere of Talk Radio. Uncensored. Radio Free America. Rick Adams is back.
He is. Right you are, Radio Avenger. Let's go right back to the phones and say hello to Harry in Texas. Hi, Harry.
Good evening, Rick, and how are you?
I'm doing well tonight. Very exhilarating program, I think.
Yes, I'm sorry I missed Eustace Mullins. I had a question for him, but maybe you know something about it. What do you know about the Liberty Dollar, Rick?
Well, the Liberty Dollar is being circulated around. People are purchasing it all over the place on the net. And, you know, from some of the, you know, you hear the advertisements on Republic during the day, don't you?
Pardon?
You hear the advertisements that we carry and the programs that we carry?
No, I don't get the Republic all the time here.
Oh, okay. Well, you should try to get in more during the day, because some of our great sponsors and people that program here are actually doing that, selling gold and selling the Liberty Dollars, I believe.
Well, that's what I'm doing. I'm an associate of them. And
good.
I just wondered what the Eustace Mullins' opinion was of that.
Well,
I think we'll ever see it maximize in our lifetime.
No, I think he'd agree, though. It's the way to go. And,
it is the only way to go. The only difference is NorFed, the outfit that puts these things out, I think they put the R on purposely because it should read no Fed, but
okay.
They put the R on it, NorFed. But
right.
I thought maybe I'm all for it, but the stubborn Germans up here in Fredericksburg find it rather tough to accept the Liberty coin.
Oh, is that right?
And when I flip a $10 silver coin on a counter, they immediately want to buy it, but they don't want to buy it for the purpose it was intended.
Mm-hmm.
They're collecting silver,
mm-hmm.
and that defeats the purpose of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, right.
Well, you know, that's the thing. You know, you're not going to get total acceptance.
Oh, no,
that's
true.
No matter what you do, and that's difficult, especially, you know, now, just imagine, you go down the store and you talk to somebody and you say, look, you know, you still can buy that house there for $12,000, house that's going for $200,000. They say, yeah, right. How are you going to do that, you know?
Yeah.
And you tell them in gold, that's exactly what it's worth.
Yeah, right.
And they just don't understand because
they've been
brainwashed.
They're stupid Americans.
Well, yeah. I mean, if they watch the evening news every night and believe what that's being fed to them every night, they'll be as dumb as a doornail.
Yeah. Well, okay, if you've got some other callers, Rick, I won't hold
that's
you
That's fine.
There.
That's okay. It's good to hear from you in Texas, my favorite Lone Star callers.
Okay.
Thank
Take
you.
Take care, and God bless you, Rick.
Thank you. You too. I appreciate that. And, yes, he has been, and bless the network, and bless all of us here, because we certainly need that divine protection, I believe. You know, we're taking on some pretty powerful people with these broadcasts, and we're speaking out. We're telling it like it is. In fact, just the speaking of media people and lies that people will believe, you know who was in town here, up my way, Rhode Island, just yesterday, giving the commencement exercise address at Providence College, it's a Catholic school, you know, none other than Tom Brokaw. And Tom Brokaw told a few jokes. Of course, they weren't too bad. I'm sure he didn't write them. Probably some of the people formerly with him on NBC did. But in any event, he once again mesmerized young people and audiences who probably just didn't realize that here's a guy speaking to them that's lied for most of his life. Most of his adult life, he's been a reporter, a so-called, and an anchor. And all he's done is disobey and violate the commandment, which says, thou shalt not bear false witness. And that's what these people in the media have done. You say, well, wait a minute, Rick, surely not purposefully. And I say, what? Why, surely purposefully they've done this. They've done it in so many areas, and it's nothing new. Media have been lying to us since they were bought and paid for by the Rothschilds, the Warburgs, and, of course, all of the others of that ilk that own and control the mass media today. They put people in positions of power at university levels, in academe, in media, and there's no difference. What makes you think that Tom Brokaw walks on water? Well, he doesn't. He may have water in the brain, but he doesn't walk on water. And the same is true of Peter Jennings and, of course, Dan Rather and Bob Schieffer and all these other guys that, you know, sit there each and every night and throw us morsels of foolishness rather than real news. And speaking of real news, of course, this story about the Quran, which we knew was published last week by Newsweek, picked up by all the media, is now an interesting case. And we might question it. You know, as I was saying to my producer, I said, well, I don't believe the media are any good. But then again, I don't believe anything this administration has said either about this war. So quite frankly, the verdict is not in on Newsweek publishing a story that had to do with the allegation a prison guard at Guantanamo tried to flush part of the or much of the Koran down a toilet. I mean, I don't know the truth. And you don't know the truth either. We know government has a way of bullying the media and working with the media at the same time. And this administration, George Bush, his administration, has been one of the most deceitful, the most untruthful, the most dishonest, the most evil that I can think of since Wilson and Roosevelt combined. And that, the record will clearly attest to. Clearly. Hello, Rodney in Texas. You're next on Uncensored Radio Free America.
Radio Avenger, how are you this evening?
Okay, thank you, sir.
Now, will you please tell us how you really feel about the Bush administration?
Well, I'm a little shy, you know.
Oh, okay.
well, I'm getting a little feedback. You got your radio volume on?
It's completely off.
Yeah,
I guess it must be this cheap telephone that I'm using. Cheap fiber optic.
There you go, made in Mexico.
Yeah.
Or in Red China. There you go.
Well.
You're guilty. You're guilty. We're going to send the Gestapo down after you.
Well, they'll have to find me. But in any case, Rick, this story that you just touched on about the Quran being desecrated at Guantanamo.
Yeah.
I mean, with all of the other despicable things that have taken place down there, including a brigadier general named Rick Baucus resigning because of the things were so despicable that this brigadier general said, I don't even want to participate in it.
That's right.
Why would we think that they would stop at desecrating a Quran?
Well, that's my question.
I find
a lot of credibility in these claims. It's not the only claim, by the way. There's many others.
And if you recall, they tried to cover up the fact that this brigadier general, thank goodness, the guy said, look, you know, he probably seen that light at the end of the tunnel, figuratively speaking, and probably said, it doesn't look too good if I hang around here, you know, In fact, when all of the abuse was going on over there at the Abu Ghraib prison, and that Brigadier General, Janice Karpinski, I think that was her name.
She's taking a little rap now.
Well, yeah, but she wasn't even allowed to be in areas there to view what was going on.
She didn't even know what was going on.
Well, she's being a whipping girl, a whipping boy, whichever one you want.
But I'll say a fall girl.
Yeah, the fall girl.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is, I absolutely believe, it's my understanding that long before the report with Newsweek came out, there were other sources who also documented the fact that these abuses were going on, and I don't believe that they stopped at the Quran. If anything, that would have been the mildest abuse that was taken.
Well, we saw what happened, as you point out, in Abu Ghraib. I mean, what went on there was so shocking to the Muslim world. The fact that people like Lindy there, the young lady, our dear sweetheart, Lindy England, and her boyfriend there, Mr. Grainer, would pose with these prisoners being abused in their own materials and, tortured in many ways. That's legendary
and
for the United States.
And let's not let it stop there. Let's go on and tell the truth and bring it on home, Rick. These people were given orders to do this, and people like Sanchez, General Sanchez, and all of the other higher-ranking officers, they were in on it, but you notice these guys have been cleared of any charges. They didn't know anything. I believe there was a serious negligence going on there.
You're
at
right.
the top and at the bottom.
And the ones at the top, including the chief himself, Mr. Rumsfeld, are
Amen,
the ones
brother.
Who should be made
like,
to pay.
Rick, like I said, bring it on home. You know, Rumsfeld was quoted as, hey, we can't have torture without a few naked bodies around.
Yeah,
now, what did he mean by that, Rick?
He laughed the whole thing off and made a joke out of it, as you know, and people applauded him, said that was a wonderful thing, because after all, these people over there are not like us. They're dirty, they're ugly, they're, you know, dark-skinned and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So why not? Why not a few tortures, a few beatings here and there, and maybe we can knock some sense into their empty heads.
And rapes.
Yeah.
As well as, Rick, just one final point here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think Eustace Mullins kind of briefly touched on this, but we're getting it in stereo, man. We're getting, the American people are taking it big time. We get our image around the world ruined, toiled by these affluent, rich, people that have never seen the light of day as far as war is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the home front, you can see how they're raping and robbing and pillaging the people's 401s and pensions here by just with the stroke of a pen.
Yep. Shamelessly doing
weekend,
it right in the open.
And now we can see why you have members of the Congress who have rebelled vehemently against having some of these extremist judges sitting on the bench. You know, a lot of people, they're just putting down the Bush administration because they lost the election. Well, guess what? You know, now that their pensions and 401ks have been legally, with the stroke of a pen, it's been ruled over the weekend that, you know what, we can file bankruptcy and we don't have to honor any of your pensions or anything. Now, all of a sudden, the shoe is on the other foot, and that's all I got to say, Rick. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. You put it very well, my friend, very articulately exposed tonight. Thank you, Rodney. And, hey, you can join in, too, at 800-313-9443. This story here, you know, you've heard the term. Maybe you haven't heard the term. It's being used. This is the day. The term in Palestinian circles is Nakba. It refers to the uprooting by Israel and the denial of their right to return to their own land 57 years ago yesterday. And a gentleman, Mahmoud Darwish, is perhaps the most famous of Palestinian poets. He wrote an article, and I guess it was like 4 years ago, he wrote this article, and just briefly, published in The Guardian in England, is the story of this Palestinian poet, Mahmoud Darwish. And he calls it the catastrophe Nakba, the catastrophe. He said, today is our day of remembrance. We needn't look at what happened yesterday, he said, to recall the chronology of crimes perpetrated. The present is a living reminder of the catastrophe, the Nakba, the tragic events of which are still unfolding. And he points out, we cannot forget because our collective and individual memories remain fertile and capable for recalling our sad past, the chronology of which is the chronology of a land and a people, the chronology of a tragedy and a heroism, the chronology and tale of related in drops of blood, in open conflict between what we are to be told to be and what we aspire to be. If the Israeli makers of this nation, this catastrophe, are declaring on this day of remembrance that the war of 1948 is not yet over, they are merely exposing the mirage of a peace which has loomed large over the past decade, in which they claim to put an end to the conflict through just apportionment of land. They have only exposed the impossibility of putting the Zionist enterprise and peace in the self-same basket, when the aim and agenda of this enterprise is still to annihilate the identity of the Palestinian people. And he goes on and on and on and on and talks about this Nakba, this day of reckoning, this day of tragedy, if you will, the Intifada, yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And this poet that was published concludes when he says, in the interest of the world's countries and peoples, in the confrontation taking place in Palestine today, and their support of the Palestinian people, a people which has been deprived of an ordinary normal life, is a test of moral stance that will reveal to what extent the values of freedom, justice, and equality have credibility. You hear so much about remembrance. Remember the Holocaust. Remember the Holocaust. Remember the Holocaust. Remember the Holocaust. Every day we are told to remember it. But the Palestinian Holocaust is still going on to this very day. And George Bush, Baby Bush, calls Ariel Sharon the butcher of Beirut, none other than a man of peace. Now, my friends, that tells you how evil an administration we have in Washington. How evil and dishonest it is from the top to the bottom, knowingly lying about history, knowingly writing off the Palestinians and suggesting they must bow before the master, the Israeli master, before there can be peace. So you see, much has not changed in all of these years, has it? Never again are the words of the Zionists and the Jews. And yet it is going on even as we speak. Even as we speak, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, the demolitions, the bombings, the torture, the murder, the beatings, all of this goes on paid for by U.S. tax dollars because we don't have an honest Congress that is independent and brave enough to shed off the yoke of bondage which they find themselves in. We have an immoral, amoral, ungodly bunch of politicians that could care less about right and wrong, only about their stature with the media, the controlled media. Not what's right, not what's wrong. And that's the name of the game, isn't it? Well, Sybil Edmonds is in the news again and talking about 9/11 and concern for the truth, Condoleezza Rice, the lying Secretary of State, and much more. And we're going to get into that, too, in a little bit. And tomorrow as well. Tomorrow night, Artie Wheeler on the show again. And Mrs. Wheeler. And more coming this week. More fascinating guests. Right now, let's take a break, and we'll be right back. Rick Adams, your Radio Avenger.
What kind of government rules your world? We have no government.
you hear that, man? Oh, I don't know about that. No government. I wish that were the case. Hey, we'd be better off. I've often said we'd be better with a organized crime in control rather than the so-called unorganized criminals in Washington. I think they're far more evil than the mafia, that's for sure, the so-called organized crime enterprises. I was going to talk a little bit about Sybil Edmonds and her letter recently and what she just said about the May 6th situation. I don't really have time tonight to read it, so tomorrow night, when we have Artie Wheeler on, during the second hour, we'll probably get into reading it more thoroughly with you and tell you what's happening with this wonderful patriotic woman who was in the FBI, served in the FBI, and, of course, wound up getting betrayed by the federal government over 9/11 and the lies of 9/11. And then there's this story about another man who was agent of the FBI, and the question that was raised is, did Israel assassinate this man, 20-year FBI veteran, Brad Duchette? And that is another issue from a group called Judicial Inc. Biz, FBI Brad Duchette, HTM. And that's something we might tie in tomorrow night, because there have been a number of people on the trail of these agents, supposedly Al-Qaeda agents, who turned out to, in some cases, be Israeli agents. Now, wouldn't that be interesting if indeed the controlled media, were to be honest for once? Well, we've got the goods on them, and we can prove it, and we'll do that tomorrow night. But I also just got my, I got the American Free Press today, but also publication I told you about in the past, a rather bold, very bold publication by Larry Patterson, investment advisor, Criminal Politics. On the front page, the picture of David Raymond Griffin. You know him. And the words, "Can this retired theologian save the United States?" His message is spreading across the country about 9/11 and the Bushes. Well, that's another shocker, huh? Criminal Politics. Fascinating publication, and maybe we'll tell you how you can get it. Yeah, you can give them a call. They're in Cincinnati, Ohio. And you can give them a call at, let's see, what is their number here? I don't even have it handy, or do I? I'll tell you what. Do we have time? Yeah, I think we might have a moment or so. Yeah, 1-800-543-0486. That's toll-free, 800-543-0486. Criminal Politics, and it's a shocker. It comes out once every 2 months, I believe, and you'll find it to be a real, real expose on the world's secret power structure. It's a magazine of conspiracy politics. All right, I see the clock ticking and just about out of time, so I want to thank you all for making this a fascinating program tonight with Eustace Mullins, and he'll be back again, as you heard, and more guests coming up this week and next. And we have a woman on who will be talking about the United Nations, One Worldism, and the role of women and what's happening to them in these days. So join us tomorrow night, 8 o'clock Central. We'll be there back then. Until then, Rick Adams, have a good night.